Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Thanks for tuning into the show today. Our topic is new technology. Just when you think you're on top of everything, the Internet of Things, the connected home, virtual and augmented reality, well, guess what? There's always more to learn. So that's the perfect segue into my special guest, Tiana Lawrence. She's here to discuss her new book, Blockchain for Dummies, and to educate us about her work. Tiana is the CMO and also one of the co-founders of Factum, which is a blockchain as a service company based in Austin, Texas. Under her leadership, the company recently secured a grant from the Gates Foundation. They're in a partnership with the Department of Homeland Security to work on blockchain projects. And I also believe they raised their Series A funding, which is fantastic. So, Tiana, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I know we're going to learn so much from you. You're an expert in blockchain, and you've written the book, Blockchain for Dummies. So what does the average customer need to know about blockchain technology, and what exactly is it?
You know, blockchain technology is so wide. It's sort of like saying internet, in that there's 100 different applications for it, and over time, these applications just keep on proliferating, and there's just more and more. So what you'll see right now is a lot of times blockchain is the record keeping system behind cryptocurrencies. Those are things like Bitcoin or Ether for Ethereum or some of these other ones. And this is something that's going pretty crazy right now. And I've been getting a lot of calls and emails from friends about different cryptocurrencies that are popping up and whether or not they should invest in them. So for your average person, that's sort of their first introduction to blockchain technology, but it can be used for a lot of other things like securing data and systems and creating interesting systems of record. And that's what my company does.
Okay, so, you know, you mentioned Bitcoin and everybody, that is a familiar word right there. I think it's more familiar than blockchain, but whether it's, you know, when we're talking about blockchain or Bitcoin or any of these ledgers that you kind of mentioned, a way to have a transaction and it's a permanent ledger, how safe and secure is it for people to use? And when would you even want to use it?
That's a really great question. So the blockchain space, or rather cryptocurrency, is I like to think of it as a little bit unforgiving. Once you send a token to someone, you can't recall it. It's different than if you sent them money and something didn't happen. You call your bank and then you go through a process with them to retrieve your funds. Or, you know, if there's any kind of fraud, then you could call the police or something like that. This is a little bit of the Wild West. And it's just beginning, to be regulated, and it's also international. So in some senses, it's very secure. I mean, that's one of the things that attracts people to this type of technology. And on the other hand, people are still learning about it. And even those that have been in the industry for years are still kind of novices it could really be financially damaging if people aren't careful. So it's something that is secure, but it's also something that you have to be very careful with when using it.
So financially damaging if you use it the wrong way, or because there's some kind of privacy breach? Or I know you said it's safe and secure, but whenever we think of just the example of all the data that we give to credit card companies or information that companies have on us that gets hacked into. So what prevents someone from hacking into blockchain and getting to this ledger?
Let me let me back it up and explain that a little better. So there's a difference between a token versus a ledger that keeps track of who owns what. So the ledger piece, which is the blockchain, that's the record of who owns what token or what address it's assigned to, rather. That's very, very secure. The more distributed the blockchain, the more secure that data is. The piece that I'm kind of talking about as far as financial risk is, I might relate it to like the roaring 20s, when people were just starting to get their hands on the stock market. You could put some money in and then the company might not even be there. And that's sort of what's happening with, industry right now is we're seeing a proliferation of these things called ICOs. And these are ways for people to raise money for interesting projects. But like, you could put money in and it could change dramatically very quickly. So for example, like the crypto tokens are going up and down quite a bit right now. And I've seen even ours, and we have a great project, has changed in price. It went from about $35 down to, I think it was like $14 in the last 2 weeks. And so if you'd bought at 35 and then 2 weeks later, you have half as much money, that might be distressing. So it's sort of like one of these things that people need to understand that these markets are very volatile, and that it's something that you have to take in consideration if you are planning to invest. And I never give investment advice, but
yeah. So who does though? Do you just go to your stockbroker and your stockbroker knows about blockchain and some of these projects?
I doubt it. so there are many different cryptocurrency exchanges. A popular one is called Poloniex, and there you'll see listings for all the different cryptocurrencies, not all of them, but many of them. And you can purchase them by, typically, like Bitcoin. So you'd open up something like a Coinbase account, buy Bitcoin, and then transfer that Bitcoin to the exchange, such as Poloniex. And then on Poloniex, you would go in and, purchase whichever cryptocurrency you thought was interesting. So there are several different steps there that kind of help prevent some novices from getting that far into this, but it's getting easier and easier every month and every year to get into this space. And it's just something that I like to warn people when they're first starting to explore the cryptocurrency space and the blockchain space, because those can often be synonyms, that this is something to be careful with. And then from another aspect, let's get back to blockchain technology itself. Like, blockchains create persistent data. The data that sits within the blockchain typically is something that will exist as long as that blockchain or that cryptocurrency is in existence. So that means that if you publish data there, it's there for a very long time. And that could be things that you don't want to have there, like somebody's social security number or something of that nature. And then it's data that you can't go to some central authority and ask for that data to be removed. It's decentralized. It will be there as long as the currency is intact.
Which can also serve a good purpose if you ever need to have record.
Yes, exactly.
Of some kind of a transaction.
It's a double-edged sword, and I think that it can be used for more positive than negative.
Okay. I want to step back for a second because, you know, when I was reading one of your roles at your company, it's CMO, which is Chief Marketing Officer. So how does a Chief Marketing Officer get to be so techy and write a book called Blockchain for Dummies? I mean, I think that's pretty cool.
Yes, I was joking with our CTO recently. He said, "You're the most technical CMO I've ever met."
It's true.
I just love emerging technology. I've always been fascinated by all types of technology. Everything from biotechnology and things like CRISPR that I think will change the world to blockchain technology, another technology that I think will change the world. So I just find the space fascinating, and I research and I play with it. I was an early Bitcoin miner. And it's just sort of like I fall down a rabbit hole and keep digging. Trying to find the light.
Right, keep going deeper and deeper. So yeah. How did you come up with this, your company? Did you know some of the other co-founders? Were you looking for the next big thing? How does it work that all of a sudden you started Factum?
So I have a couple business partners, and I had been in the blockchain space through Bitcoin. One of my business partners had come to me a few years prior with a mining company. And mining in the cryptocurrency space is the machinery used to basically produce these tokens. I'm trying to simplify it here. And so I had helped him sell a bunch of those. And then that's how I had found the space and become fascinated and started mining. And then he came to me with a white paper. And this white paper was this thing called notary chains that later became Factum. So notary chains, Factum, was this concept that you could use blockchain technology for a lot more than it currently was, which was this basic concept of trading tokens between each other, which I thought was fascinating.
Is a token like a piece of money? Is it have value? Is that when you refer to token?
Token. So a token, for example, is a Bitcoin, and Bitcoins have quite a bit of value right now. Okay. But it's a way of we all sort of, as a group, decide it has value, and therefore the more people that decide it has value, the more value it has. Hmm. It's kind of a network effect. And I had become fascinated by that concept, but because I had been doing mining for Bitcoin, I had a mining rig in my house. It was a $6,000 piece of machinery. It sounded like two shot vacs, and it, produced a lot of heat. I actually turned off the heat in my house. I was living in Oregon at the time because the whole machine was heating my whole house. And I was thinking to myself, this is insane. I'm mining for fake internet money that everybody agrees has a lot of value. I think this is fascinating, but this is a lot of energy to burn for sort of this fun game we're all playing with each other. What else could be done? Could we, mapping the stars? Could we be looking at the human genome? Like what are some of these other things? And that's what Factum proposed in its white paper, was that we could use it to secure data and systems. And with some of my interest in IoT and other emerging technologies, I knew that if we could create a way of permanent data that everyone could trust and go back and reference, that would solve a lot of the problems that the internet has and could possibly deal with some of the situations that we see abroad where there is very little trust. So I thought that Factum could solve a lot of interesting problems. So I was in the middle of selling my other company, finished that up, and moved to Austin, Texas to help this friend and a couple other people start Factum.
Very cool. Well, you were certainly in the heart of technology in Austin. How much education do you think is necessary for businesses to actually understand blockchain, and what areas of business are more up to speed on it, do you think?
Okay, great question. So it depends on the use case. The first couple use cases of blockchain technology has been to move and trade value faster and cheaper. And so financial institutions were the first to look at this technology. They were probably most afraid of it as a way of disintermediating them. They have been the primary ones that sort of like, if you need to wire some money to South Africa, you've got to go to your bank and do that. You don't have to do that anymore. It's faster and more efficient to use Bitcoin now to send money to places like South Africa, something that I had to do recently, than it is to do it through the bank. I actually initially tried to do a bank wire to South Africa to pay for a conference, and it took a month and it bounced back, and I texted them and said, "Hey, do you take Bitcoin?" They're like, "Oh yeah." And it was 5 minutes later, I sent it to them, and I think it cost me maybe 50 or 60 cents to send it versus I think about $50 with the bank or something. And they had confirmation. They had it, you know, very, very quickly. So, I mean, that's the power of this kind of technology from a moving money faster point of view. And so financial institutions are probably the most educated. Governments are also very, very educated in this because it's cross-border payments. That's something that they like to keep a really close eye on. And so they've been watching blockchain and cryptocurrency technologies for a very long time. And then after that, I would say the healthcare industry and the insurance industry is interested in this, and from a securing systems and data. I don't know if you remember this or not, but a lot of hospitals, for example, have been held hostage with ransomware, actually had Bitcoin turned against them. Okay. And that's probably what brought blockchain technology to their attention. But
didn't that
instead
just recently happen with the ransomware?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So now it can be used not only to, you know, for nefarious reasons, but it can also be used for good.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, thank goodness. Yeah, I know whenever you have this great new technology, it's always for good, but then there's the other side of the coin too. So you mentioned government. And that cross-border payment. So it's no surprise Department of Homeland Security is working with you on something. Can you talk about any of your projects or companies that you're working with and kind of what's interesting going on in your world, if you're allowed to?
Absolutely. So my company hasn't ever been focused on the moving value faster aspect of blockchain technology. We've always been focused on securing data and systems. So our projects with the Department of Homeland Security and through them, Custom and Border Patrol, has been on securing IoT devices. These are the little Internet of Things, so cameras and ground sensors and things like that. So the general problem with these, I mean, most people are going to see it in the media as far as there was a zombie IoT attack where a bunch of baby monitors and DVRs were taken over and then used to take down websites. It's because a lot of these IoT devices aren't that secure. They just sort of have this admin password that you can basically use, I think, like a script to go through, find, and then take over these devices and then point them at a website and do a distributed denial of service attack on a website and take it down. So that's
crazy.
What happened about a year ago to like Netflix, and I think Amazon got hit.
How long does it take to stop that process and kind of like shut it down and get everything back on track so it's no one can penetrate it?
You know, the denial of service attacks are a real pain in the butt. We actually had one recently on our own website. We were able to get through it. It does take some time because you have to identify, you know, what's happening. You have to put up server guards to help protect your network. Those are things that we did. I'm not privy to what those other websites had to do in order to protect themselves. I just know how they were attacked. I'm not really sure what they did in order to prevent it from happening in the future.
That's really interesting.
I saw recently that the camera manufacturers were doing recalls on these devices to try to fix the issue. So that's what we started working on the Department of Homeland Security with. And what we're doing is securing the data that's coming off of these devices so that you can prove that those images are authentic, that they're coming from the device that you believe that they're coming from. And this other concept that's really fascinating, which we call proving the negative. It means that if you have like a camera roll, for example, how do you know that none of the images are missing or that nothing's been interjected into that mix that shouldn't be there? And so that's one of these other things that blockchain technology can do, is by cryptographically signing these images and also having it be a part of a unique chain. That's something that Factum does. You can see if anything's missing from your data set, which is a very powerful tool, both for internal and external attacks. So whether you're worried as an auditing agency, hey, are they hiding anything from us? Can we audit them without actually having to look at the data, which is something you can do with blockchain technology? or from an outside attack, hey, has somebody placed images in here that don't belong in here?
So you can actually see when something is removed or added in, which causes all sorts of bells and whistles and fire alarms go off.
It's a little simpler in our system. It's a green check mark or a red X. But I will talk to the devs and see if we can get some better, animation. I would appreciate that.
I mean, I've seen all sorts of crazy things.
Ding, ding, ding.
I find this fascinating. Tiana, I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts just for a few moments. We're going to give some love to our sponsors. I also want to mention that Women Worldwide has joined the C-Suite Radio Network. And you can find all of our episodes on C-Suite Radio. And be sure to check out some of the other great podcasts when you're there. When we get back from the break, Tiana will share more about her love of tech and what's next for us to keep our eyes on.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with 2 M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Tiana Lawrence and I were just chatting about blockchain, new technology, what's important, what we need to know. And Tiana, everything that you were saying is just so fascinating. You talked a little bit about how you got started with your company, Factum. And I kind of wondered what motivates you the most to keep doing what you're doing. You know, is it this love of technology? Is it the people you work with? Is it something else? Maybe you can share.
Yeah, that's a great question. I've been an entrepreneur. I think before I even knew what that word meant.
Probably like 5 with the lemonade stand, right?
something like that. The first kind of like official thing would have been this business with my brother and a friend that our parents helped sponsor. We actually had a little construction cleanup company and I was 16.
No way.
It was horrible. It was like the worst business ever. So, I mean, part of it is like innate, like I think it's just in me. And the other part is, I'm just curious and I love to work. And I love emerging technology and it sort of gives me purpose and meaning. When I feel like the things that I'm doing are benefiting other people in the world and are making things better. That was one of those things I sort of had a moment a couple years ago when I was feeling kind of very disillusioned. around like marketing and sales. I'm like, oh, I don't care what the color of the car is. You know, it's just a car. It was sort of like this analogy for, I can sell anything, just, you know, give it to me. it was just like,
right.
I just felt like I was just, you know, adding to global warming and the destruction. I know this is getting very,
No, please.
We can like go there. Work that gives me meaning. And that's really hard to describe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's true. You want to feel like you have more meaning and you're doing something to help the world. And technology is a great way to pursue that. I can imagine you as one of those kids who has a science project and you just blow away all the other little kids. Was that you with the elaborate science projects?
I think I went through this whole phase of the baking soda volcano situation.
Oh, no. Did you try it?
So many times and so many different types of volcano, so many different colors of volcano.
Oh my goodness. I just remember watching that on the Brady Bunch. I don't know if you remember that show. I don't want to date myself too much, but there was a Brady Bunch episode where like the volcano just explodes everywhere. And I never tried it. So does it work?
Yes, it does. And my mother was out of baking soda and baking powder because I also tried that in combinations of the two.
Well, every
and vinegar.
And vinegar. Oh, lovely. Well, I'm sure that you are very busy at work and, you know, your lifestyle as an entrepreneur. So just curious, how are you prioritizing what you do? Tell us about reaching your goals and feeling satisfied every single day.
You know, a friend once told me you can have everything, but you can't have everything at once. And I sort of rebelled against that notion, but have slowly come to the realization that they're probably right. So what I'm sort of doing in my life is, as I'm letting go of what I think I should have, I'm just sort of pursuing the things that make me feel good and that I feel are bringing meaning and purpose to my life. And not holding on to what I think, I should be doing or what I should have or, you know, the relationships I should have, but simply adding to what feels good in my life. And it, I don't feel like I have an answer there, but for example, I know doing yoga in the morning before I go to work makes me feel good. It makes me more productive at work. So I do that. I know rock climbing brings a lot of friendship into my life and is also something that makes me feel good. So I do that in some moderation because I did break my leg doing that about 2 years ago. So
I was
carefully.
I was just thinking, wow, maybe I should try rock climbing. Not.
No, go do it. Just don't do the crazy stuff.
Yeah. Well, don't you have something on you that prevents you from falling and breaking your leg?
Oh, that's the idea. Yes. No, I was at the gym and I was actually bouldering. I should say I was doing something more exciting than at the gym. And then I fell 20 feet.
I pictured you on this big mountain, you know, doing the rock climbing. But the gym is good. The gym is good for the busy entrepreneur.
Exactly. It was, you know, I just had this pitch. I'd spoken to a bunch of bankers and there was one banker there that really scared me. And every time it wasn't rational and I was kind of beating myself up. So I went to the gym because that makes me feel better, you know, emotionally. And I'm like working it out on the wall and then I just fall.
Oh, gosh, that must have hurt.
You know, it did. But it's also probably one of the best things that ever happened to me because it reminded me how human I am. It was also one of these things of like, I can do it myself. I don't need people to help me or take care of me that I didn't know I had in me. And then when you're completely helpless and you need somebody to help you, you know, just, you know, make dinner or like go get you the bottle of pills across the room because it's so much work, you know, that was really, really good because it let me get a lot closer to people and have more authentic relationships.
Sure. And to know when to ask for help. Right?
Right.
Because sometimes that's hard for entrepreneurs, but I think it's very important to be able to ask.
Right. And delegation and saying, hey, like my plate is full. I can't take on this, or I'm only good for like 2 hours today before I need to be taken home by somebody because I can't manage that myself.
Exactly. You mentioned letting go. Mm-hmm. I know that sometimes it's hard to let go of habits or relationships. Did you find it difficult? Was it easy? You know, was it a process?
You know, I, maybe a little too personal, but I'm divorced. I recently divorced. I am almost 3 years. And it was very hard. It was probably one of the hardest things in my life. I was going through selling a company and then, you know, you get divorced and it kind of like, you lose a lot of friendships. And for women, identity, because I was sort of identified as a wife, first often, which was sort of, you know, also bizarre. So there's a lot of things there around like how hard it is around letting go of those things. But also when you let go of things that are not good for you, it makes room for things that are really good for you and growth. Actually, I had been taking some business classes, and one of them, which I thought was ridiculous, and I was getting through this class, and it's maybe karma or something that it's one of my favorite classes. It was called Managing Transitions. And I, you know, I'm a Rotary member, and I'm, you know, I have a prominent business in my town. And, you know, I'm married and I live in a gorgeous house in the suburbs. And I'm like, I don't have any transitions. I don't need to manage anything. This is dumb.
Oh boy.
And it wasn't 6 months later that I'm like, I'm not with Rotary, because sure. I'm moving and I'm selling my company and I'm getting divorced. Who am I? I don't know.
That's a lot of transitions. Sometimes it just happens that way. Similar situation for me, and moving through that divorce process and all the things that went on at my business. Once I did move through, so liberating. And yeah, even just the littlest things to say, oh, I can do that. It was just, I don't know, a whole new chapter, you know, a new start, a fresh start. So it is painful. There's no doubt about it. But in the end, and I can attest that, you know, I'm on a second marriage. It's a better life. So, you know, there's always hope. Something to look forward to.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is one of those things that it's painful, but life is painful. Mm-hmm. We can't control that. All we can control is our attitude and our reaction to the things that happened to us sometimes.
Right. And we can control how we look at things, which if you stay focused and positive, you can ease the suffering.
Absolutely.
So you're always going to have pain. But I sometimes think that, you know, if there's a choice to suffer or not to suffer, I'm going to choose not to suffer, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. No point in seeking suffering.
Exactly. Exactly. So as an entrepreneur, what about time management? Are you, I'm just assuming now, because you are so techie, that you probably have a lot of gadgets and software and things that just help you to stay on track and prioritized. Am I right?
Yes. And it kind of depends on what my role and responsibility is at that moment. Something that has never changed is I live and die by my calendar. And I learned to block things into my calendar. Like my yoga class is in my calendar. It helps remind me that, you know, I shouldn't stay up until midnight, because I have yoga at 6:30 in the morning, and I know that 8 hours of sleep is important for me. There was actually one point in my life when I was taking college classes and running a business that I also blocked in sleep, and I'd have these little reminders ping up, time to go to bed.
Yeah.
You have 15 minutes.
You know? No pressure, huh?
No pressure.
Boy.
So that's one of those tools that I've used. And also setting out time frames. So one of the things I do is writing, and I like to do research for that. And so blocking in time to do that, and budgeting that for self. And that's one of those things I use to help make sure that I hit the things that are important to me, and not let sort of like the day-to-day things overwhelm and take over my day, is putting in the big things that are important first and letting everything else fall away. I know that that has at times made me very unpopular with people because they're like, but you never got back to me. I'm like, were you doing something I was interested in? And then I sound horrible. But the reality is like, if you want to be able to do the things that are important to you, every moment that takes you away from that goal takes you away from it. And to look at it in that very fierce, unforgiving light, and I think especially as women, we often put ourselves last, and we put our goals last. And to transition that, like if we want to do big things in our life, then we have to put those goals first, and let the unimportant things fall away, and understand really, really clearly what you do care about and what you don't care about, and say no to the things that you don't care about without feeling guilt about it.
That's so true. And if you are blocking it off on your calendar, then it shows that you really, really do care about it.
Mm-hmm.
So very smart. Yep. With all of the success that you're having, so I know we talked about that you got your funding, I thought maybe you could share some of your challenges. And oh boy, I bet getting that funding might have been a challenge. So I hear that whenever you go through rounds of funding, it can be extremely tough. So what do you think? What are some of your challenges?
Yeah, you know, every day definitely does feel like a challenge. One of my innate ones is I'm dyslexic. So I was lamenting the other day, I was having kind of a frustrating day. And when I'm tired and grumpy, I feel like dyslexia just turns back on, which then brings more tired grumpiness to my life and more frustration. I'm like, why can't I just spell this word? Why does it take me 15 times? Because I can tell that it's misspelled and then I got to look it up. Right. And then I can't find it because I can't spell it right. You know, it just like spirals. it's like one of these things is like, no. So that's like an internal challenge. The other thing is, great, we raise money, but now we have a growing company and right. all these new people. And if anybody, you know, it's every time you bring in a new person, you sort of go through that process again of establishing the norms for the group and sort of like the war of power, like, you know, who does what and who's in charge. And so that can be quite stressful as people try to assert themselves and show what value they can have in the group, which is all normal behavior, but can be quite stressful. And, you know, one of the other challenges I think that a lot of other women might be able to relate to is even when you're having success, to remember to celebrate it and not think, oh my gosh, I'm a failure. No one likes me. Like, I don't really know anything about anything, that imposter syndrome. So the constant yes. battle of, you know, the positive self-talk that you are enough and that you got this, and to keep moving forward and to forgive yourself for the things that you don't know and the places where you aren't enough and that it's okay.
Now, is the imposter syndrome where you're constantly feeling like no matter what you do, it's not good enough? And, or is that the one where you don't feel like you're the expert when you actually are? Or a little bit of both?
I think it can be both. And I think that, you know, if you're a humble, curious person, that you might always feel that. And that if we aren't feeling that, if we don't feel the need to keep learning, that maybe we actually could become the imposter by right. thinking that we do know everything. So, you know, a little bit of self-talk around that, this concept of maybe self-compassion, maybe.
Yeah, very, very important. How do you keep learning? Is it just the people around you who are filling your soul with new knowledge? Or are you out there scouring all different tech publications and blogs and going to conferences and networking? What does that look like?
A little bit of all of those. I try to really curate where and who I get my information from. And also when I'm trying to understand something, to try to get that same information, ask the same question, maybe in a little bit different way, to many different people and see how they respond to it, to go out and test that myself. Like with blockchain technology, oh, it works like this. Interesting. Let me go see if I can make it work like that. So that's one of those things. As far as like scouring the interwebs for information, I think that that's something that you have to take with a fine tooth comb, and a very skeptical eye, maybe just because I've seen the sausage made too mm-hmm. many times that I really question the validity of information when it's just anybody now has the ability to create information.
Right.
So I'm trying to say that in a very careful way because it's sure. not like I want to say you don't get your information from the internet. But just
it's
to be
only as good as the source. So you have to be correct. Careful what you're, right. and, you're sourcing.
And can you see it from lots of different places mm-hmm. and are they sourcing the same spot?
Exactly. Yep. So can you actually tell us what's next after blockchain? Not that we even understand it fully, but I mean, are you, does your company, are you that far down the road where you might even be seeing the next big thing and watching this technology?
I think, you know, again, this is like the early days of the internet and it's been moving so quickly, but we're just starting to see the first iterations of it. And so what this space will look like in 10 years, I don't think that we could recognize it. Just like, you know, 10 years ago, we were looking at some of the first, it was what, 2007 was the first iPhone. And then they opened up the App Store. And what did that do to our lives? Could we have even imagined that? You know, before that, I think I had I had a BlackBerry, and I was pretty blown away that I could check my email all the time. Let alone, oh my goodness, the internet's actually at the finger at my fingertips, and what the internet looks like. So I think that that's some of the things. Like the promise of this technology is, basically empowering the global economy in new ways. So one of the things that keeps third world countries from developing is this concept of dead capital. It's this idea that, like here in the United States, we can go get credit, we can buy a home and things like that because we have access to capital in it. And when we buy a home, we don't lock up a couple $100,000. We just need a small down payment and then we make payments over time.
Right.
That's not true most places. You need a lot more money up front, and then even then, securing the ownership, knowing that you actually own it, is constantly in question. So that makes things hard as far as like even being able to insure your property. So if you're a business owner, how do you mitigate risk? So I think that that's one of those things that this technology could really change, is that. Another aspect is identity. It's the ability to establish who you are in an immutable way. And that's another thing that we're working on with this company called SmartTrack. SmartTrack is the number one producer. I believe they have about 80% of the market. I might be wrong there, but they produce RFID and NFC chips. These are things that go on to feeder documents that are used to build identity. These
yeah,
are things
heard
like
of
birth
RFID,
certificates.
But I've never heard of NFC.
Near field communication.
Okay, great.
What this does is allow you to build identity that can't be backdated or changed, and you can prove that this identity existed and that it was issued by X certificate authority, like a government. Which is really, really powerful because, I mean, right now you can go down the street in most third world countries and have birth certificates or, you know, pretty legitimate passports printed up. And that's why people don't trust doing business there, is you can't trust other people. And that's really fundamental to commerce, is trust. So if we can fix some of those problems in the developing world, I think that that would really change the way the global economy works. I'm basically getting into why I'm really excited about this technology.
It's fascinating. Your work is fascinating. Your journey, very interesting. So Tiana, tell us where people can find out more about you, your company, your book, Blockchain for Dummies.
You can find the book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And almost any other place that they sell books, because it's widely, so it's well distributed. You can find out more about me through factum.com, and that's my company, and I have a little bio there. You can always find me on LinkedIn as well. I'm not always great at messaging people back there because I get a lot of spam, but yes, those are places you can find out about me, or Twitter.
Yes, always Twitter. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and congratulations on all of your success. We really appreciate you sharing your knowledge and your journey with us, so thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. And I also want to thank all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.